Well, I've referenced it a few times this morning that the news just seems to be coming fast and furious today and kind of just pounding through these headlines. It does make me feel like I'm in a jungle. And who better to help us walk through the realities of the jungle than friend of the program, Dr. Bruce Ashford, who is he works with professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Seminary. He's dean of faculty there. And Bruce, I'm curious, as are you getting back to school now in seminary, or, you know, at the seminary level, are you so spiritual that there's really no divide anymore between like school and pursuing the faith? And you're always dialed into the kingdom, from what I understand, Bruce.
That's exactly right. You read it exactly right. No, we're back in for the semester. Got a lot of good vibes and good energy on campus. And great to be back on the show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I know that you just released an article on Judge Kavanaugh and some of their credentials, and it was picked up by Fox News as well. And can you just help us give some sanity to this conversation where there is so much going back and forth between both sides of the aisle? When we actually consider his credentials, whether you're liberal or conservative, the man really does have a pretty long track record of judicial work.
Yeah, I mean, if I can put it briefly in a minute or less, we've got an absolute carnival going on in the confirmation hearings, and we saw hints of it before the hearings with NAACP representative calling Kavanaugh a dangerous criminal, a senator saying that he was paving the path to tyranny and so forth. In brief, Kavanaugh has impeccable legal credentials. He's faithful to the Founding Fathers' vision for what a Supreme Court justice should do, and he's got the personal character necessary to hold the high office. And I think everyone in the room knows that. And so this debate, and I can follow up on those three points, this debate should be about those merits. Unfortunately, it's not. It's a back and forth between the two political parties that started when the Democrats borked Robert Bork and has continued with both sides upping the ante continually in this battle and grandstanding.
And
this is the latest iteration of it.
Yeah, and it's almost just difficult to watch. There was one refreshing moment for me yesterday as I was catching some of the proceedings, and that's when a self-described left liberal lawyer, Lisa Blatt, was chosen by Judge Kavanaugh to give his endorsement before he made his first speech in front of the panel. And she said that I'm somebody who would advocate for 9 Justice Ginsburgs on the court. She's so very liberal. She said, but I have to recognize that Judge Kavanaugh brings credentials to the bench. And I thought in this carnival that you referenced, Bruce, it was just sort of this moment of clarity and sanity that we are capable of recognizing credentials, whether or not we agree with the liberal conservative side of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm really glad that Blatt was willing to get up there and put her reputation on the line. She's going to take a beating for that. You know, his legal credentials, he clerked for Anthony Kennedy, who was center or center-left, depending on how you want to view it. He worked for the staff that impeached President Clinton. He worked for George Bush. He, you know, his education, all those things are impeccable. Then the big deal here is that we've got, and this is the second, I gave 3 reasons, you know, that I think he deserves a seat on the Supreme Court. And the second reason, and this is the real, the real dispute between the Republicans and the Democrats, what is the role of a judge? And so increasingly on the Democratic side in the past few decades, the view has been that the judge's role is to be sort of similar to a congressman, only they've got a lifetime appointment. And the way they play a role similar to a congressman is that they are allowed to reinterpret the Constitution when they deem necessary, so sort of to legislate from the bench. They view the Constitution as a living document, sort of a malleable document, like a wax nose, and the justices are to have the wisdom to know which things should sort of be taken out of the Constitution, which things should be inserted. The conservative view, and it's the view that I hold, is that texts have integrity, and that the Constitution is not like a wax nose, cannot be reinterpreted in light of the times by the justices. If we want to change the Constitution, it needs to be taken to the people. That's what the Founding Fathers wanted. Taken to the people, voted on by Congress. And that's been done. We've got a number of amendments to the Constitution, and that's how it ought to be done today. If you want to insert rights into the Constitution that aren't there, you don't let 5 to 9 Ivy League lawyers in black nightgowns take it upon themselves to change the Constitution. Well, let the people do it be the legislature.
And I think that's just it, right? It's that battle of how to interpret the Constitution that we see and appreciate. We can catch your article on foxnews.com relative to some of these characteristics, and it's terribly helpful. I know also, too, on your website, bruceashford.net, Christianity for the Common Good, you released a couple of days ago an article talking about the transgender pronoun debate. And, Bruce, we're going to take a little early break so we can give a lot of time to this upcoming segment. And if people want to join the conversation, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. And I want to get your thoughts about how all of these different kinds of pronouns have come into play in our culture and what the implications are going to be for organizational life moving forward. So more to come with Bruce Ashford up next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 11 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and joined by Bruce Ashford of Christianity the Common Good. He writes on his blog and website, bruceashford.net. I highly recommend going there and seeing some of the updated articles. And Bruce, we took a little early break. It still doesn't leave us very much time, but this transgender conversation is such an important one. I know you and I spent an hour together on Bill Arnold's show one morning with it, and we could stand to do another hour again like that. But some recent policy implications have come out relative to the use of pronouns and how we're going away from she and he in many organizations, including places like the University of Minnesota. So talk us through what's happening here.
Yeah, so, you know, we've got in the UK and the United States and Canada and other countries in the West, transgender ideology has, you know, now for at least a decade, it really settled in as an important issue, something that's on the map for Americans. And it's being translated now into public policy and public institutions. And when there are now sort of codes, politically correct codes being put in place and enforced, it threatens the livelihood of public employees who may want to respect people with gender dysphoria and care for them, but who want to not use pronouns that are antithetical to what Scripture teaches. But it not only hurts public employees, I think it hurts the free and democratic nature of society. So, when speech codes are put in place that we have to use pronouns such as Z, C, Zir, Here, Co, Ev, Xe, and Thon, and remember, you know, which person aligns with which of upwards of a dozen pronouns, and when that's enforced, it's beginning to cause problems. I'm not sure that people can remember that many pronouns. I know that Christians have difficulty referring to people by pronouns that do not align with that person's biological sex. And so we've got, you know, a difficult road ahead. And in general, what I'm arguing is that these speech codes undermine our religious liberty and our free speech. Do you want to talk about either of those?
Yeah, I would love, you know, just the liberty piece of it. I think it's one of those very difficult things that many believers have to try to figure out relative to institutional structures and secular structures is, what does it mean to have my religious convictions, and yet there might be organizational policy that sometimes gets tricky and is even in conflict with our faith? This isn't new to American life now. This has been a conversation for 2,000 years. So what do you recommend about how you hold to the convictions and yet you're part of a different kind of life?
Yeah, so, you know, the religious liberty battle that's going on right now, it's enshrined in the Constitution, but you've got a number of Americans who do want to uphold religious liberty, and the way it's defined in the Constitution and in case law for most of American history has been that religious liberty is the free exercise of religion. So it's not just the freedom to worship God privately and have private beliefs and whisper about it in our homes and our churches. It's that we're allowed to exercise it in public. And part of that exercise is to speak freely about it. Then on the other hand, you've got folks who would like to restrict religious liberty so that it's not the free exercise of religion, but the freedom to worship God privately and to whisper about him in our homes and our churches. But the deal is this. Once you begin to restrict religious liberty and the free speech that's a part of it, you threaten every other freedom that we have. Religious liberty and the free speech that tends to come with it is at the absolute heart of a free and democratic society. And when anyone undermines it, including a transgender person, it will end up hurting all of us, including transgender persons, in the future. It'll be an increasingly authoritarian society.
Well, and eventually, when we see from the annals of history, we see that this kind of conversation often doesn't end well for Christians, and in terms of they tend to become the target of persecution and people that are really the problem in this situation. And it seems, Bruce, at least in the course of my life, that increasingly so Christians in a variety of ways are being viewed as the problem, that if we could just resolve the bigotry, if we could just resolve the sectarianism of Christianity, we'd be fine as a country. But that really would undermine our religious freedoms.
It would. So what you're having now is you're having vague and ambiguous discrimination policies, which are not in the Constitution, and those discrimination policies are being treated as more important as religious liberty and free speech, which are enshrined in the Constitution. The problem is when you undermine these things, as you mentioned a moment ago, it won't go well for Christians, but I want to say it won't go well for anybody.
Yeah.
When we shut down speech, we encourage hypocrisy, and when we encourage hypocrisy, we won't know who people are, and then we can't persuade them. It undermines social progress. Social progress often depends on free speech, on courageous people speaking up with unpopular ideas and persuading other Americans toward those ideas. Suppression of free speech tilts us in an authoritarian direction. You know, the more control we give to the state and to elected officials to tell us what we can and can't do, can and cannot say, the less democratic we become, the more authoritarian. And then finally, you know, if the train continues to go down the tracks in this direction, Christians will be less free to preach the gospel. We've seen in the UK and in Canada, pastors who were, put in jail briefly for preaching the gospel in relation to gender and sexuality. I think we'll see an increasing amount of those things. I think we'll see certain industries in the U.S. in which Christians won't be able to rise through the ranks and maybe not be able to work at all, like the medical industry and the public education industry. And so I think it's a serious issue. It's not just a matter of a few pronouns here and there. It strikes really at the heart of our first freedoms.
And Bruce, we were out with my wife Hallie and I were out with our two oldest children last night, teenagers over dinner, and this conversation came up. What do you have any advice or recommendations for families? Like, how do we begin to talk with our kids about these change in gender pronouns? And you know, they're not maybe processing on quite the critical thinking levels yet. And so this whole thing has got to be wildly confusing for them.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny you say that. My wife and I just this past week have kind of outlined how we want to begin teaching our small children. We have small children about this, you know, and so we're starting with kind of a positive exposition of what the Bible teaches about God's design for the world, marriage being between a man and a woman, and that there being that God created people as man and as woman, that we can't change those things, that that's a given from God. And then after that, we're going to move to teaching them that there are people who disagree with us and who live differently and who want to identify with a gender that's not the one God gave them, or who want to redefine marriage to include something other than one man and one woman. And so we want to start with the positive exposition from the Bible, and then after that, put it in contrast with what other people believe, all the while teaching our children to love and respect the person with whom they disagree, while at the same time being unwilling to be sort of pressured or cowed into believing what we ought not believe. Does that make sense?
It really does, yeah. We got less than a minute left now. I'd be curious, for our young kids too in school, do you encourage them to speak up about their beliefs, or is it just better off at this point, given the bullying, given everything that's going on, to just say, you know, we're going to live a different way, but it's not really a conducive place to be able to share what we believe?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really don't know how to answer it well right now. I think this is something that so many of us we do want our kids to be able to speak the truth, but we're trying to figure out when and how for them to speak the truth, and at what age is it a good time to say the things that they need to say. And so I would leave it as a question mark, something that all of us together as Christians here in America need to figure out.
That's Bruce Ashford, and BruceAshford.net. I highly recommend going to his website, reading some articles on Christianity from the Common Good. Bruce, thanks as always for joining us. I would love to do an hour with you on transgenderism sometime here in the near future.
Great. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Yeah, we'll take a break and wrap up our show for the morning. So appreciate Bruce's perspective on these matters. He's somebody who's at the forefront of thinking about how we as Christians engage in the culture. As the culture shifts, we have to think about our lives in a different kind of way, and so helpful. So do go to his website, BruceAshford.net, for some really good suggestions about how to live out our faith. We're looking forward to tomorrow's show as we continue to walk out life together in the kingdom. I know I'll be joined by Professor of Theology Jim Bilby. We're going to talk about why there are so many different views of communion. And then we have a new arrival to the Faith Radio Network, Jeremiah Johnston, in the show, and he'll be on tomorrow. previewing what he is going to be promoting and being a part of in the network. Looking forward to tomorrow's show. Catch you tomorrow, everybody. And remember, the tomb is empty.